announcement out of respect for our time. So, welcome to the transition team meeting on February 25th. I'm Chip Sepanis, I'm co-chair of this committee.
We'll do a roll call.
Okay.
Jackson Bowman?
Yes.
David Gonzalez is excused. Paul Harkin? Mary Lawrence Hicks is present. Andrew Lopez? Eileen Laughran is excused. Chip Sepanich?
Yeah.
Laura Thomas is excused. Channing Celeste Wayne? Eric Sutter?
Yes.
Or Ken Pierce? Kenneth Hornby or Wade Flores?
Present.
Charles Cerrone or
here.
TJ Lee? Tracy Packer?
I'm here, but I'm not.
As one of the non-voting members, there's a three non-voting members. That's one from CHEP, one from HHS, and myself. Mark Molnar, present. HHS.
Present.
Okay, so we do not have quorum.
Great. Review today's draft agenda in front of you. Let me know if there are any additions, subtractions, or changes. Okay. Are there any objections to approving the agenda as it is? Hearing none, agenda is approved. Oh, we don't have quorum. I'm sorry. I have to wait for that. Let's review the minutes from January 29th. That'll take a couple minutes.
Yeah, second one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oops.
Which one was not updated?
I think the one that was passed out was, right?
I only printed, I threw out the old ones.
Oh, okay.
Was there another old one?
I don't know now if I actually updated it sometime today after. I don't know.
The last one I printed was the very last one you sent yesterday.
I think the only updates I did were pretty minor, anyway.
Look at that,
is this a test to see if we can figure out which one?
It is.
I'll try to answer.
Oh,
you
both
can
stay
with
it.
Yeah.
Ah, gotcha. I didn't know that. So there are two.
Any changes to the minutes?
Minor change on page 2 under next steps, the third, sorry, fourth clear bullet of my name. Noted that the HRSA Ryan White officer would like to be, I think I meant to say, informed of the transition.
Oh, okay.
Instead of involved in it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything more? I'll give you one more minute.
We now have quorum as well with Channing Celeste just arriving. So
okay, great.
I want to give it a little more time to look through it.
Seems I hear no further changes to the draft minutes. Are there any objections to approving the draft minutes as was the one correction? Okay, none, they are approved. Let's go back to agenda item number Sue, which is approving the agenda. Are there any objections to approving the agenda as written? Hearing none, agenda is approved. Announcements. Announcements? Nothing? Okay. Public comment. Nope. And let's go ahead with item number six, snapshot of HIV care and prevention funding. Dean and Tracy.
Okay, so this is an overview presentation of both of our sections, and we cover funding and service category and several things we'll walk through. And if you have questions after each slide, I think the board's fine enough that we can roll with that. So first page, it is just a reminder, this just has the bullet points of the National HIV and AIDS Strategy. As developed in 2010, and it's just a reminder of the broader goals here, and that this is really like a shared goal of both of our sections of HIV prevention, CHEP, and HIV health services as well. Just a reminder of the joint path we're going down there. And the next page is some of the for services, and we'll start with HIV prevention and then HHS is on the next slide.
Thank you, Dean. So when the national strategy was released, the HIV Prevention Planning Council and HIV Prevention Section, as we were then known, developed sort of a framework or a model of the prevention, the system of prevention, as we called it. And this is one way of looking at it. The idea of the shift was from focusing on just changing people's sexual and drug use behavior to really looking at how can people know their status, again, that get support, whether they're negative or positive, to get the best health care possible. So starting at the top, then, you'll see HIV testing in community-based settings. And we actually, in our RFP, we put these into categories, and we still talk about it this way. So category one is community-based HIV testing. We really funded high-volume sites. There are three. One is Alliance Health Project. One is Magnet as part of the foundation. And the third is is San Francisco City Clinic. And each of those does around 7,000 tests or more a year. The second category is health education and risk reduction. To address drivers of HIV, and there are six drivers. I don't know how much detail I should go into because it could go on too long. But the drivers of HIV were identified by the council looking at data, looking at literature, research that showed that there are six drivers, meaning that people who were connected to one of those things were two times more likely to become infected with HIV. Those are pauper use, methamphetamine use, heavy alcohol use, crack and cocaine, multiple partners, and sexually transmitted diseases, specifically gonorrhea. So anybody who had one of those drivers in their lives were more likely to become infected. So then we focused on programs that would address those drivers. So you can imagine that STD treatment is part of that, as well as substance use services. Category three is prevention with positives, and in some ways that's an old-fashioned term. Prevention with positives is basically meaning providing services to people who are positive to ensure that they're supported to access care, stay in care, access treatment, and feel comfortable adhering to treatment. I'm going to talk about that later and in a little bit more detail. So we have some standalone programs that are reaching people who are positive, but more of our work is really integrated into the centers of excellence, and you'll see that later. There are four special projects, and those are really trying to provide a holistic approach to reaching certain populations where the prevalence is higher and there are health disparities. I alluded to this at last month's meeting. So the four special projects are one reaching African American men, men who have sex with men, gay men, Latino gay men is the second one. The third one is a general special project reaching gay men. And the third is one reaching trans women. And the idea behind these special projects is that they're holistic, that there's HIV testing, there's prevention with positives, prevention with negatives, and trying to address people where they are at and supporting them where, you know, in service. And then finally, category 8, which is syringe programs, access and disposal for syringes. And then not a category is set-aside funded programs, which is SAMHSA money that comes into the health department, allows for a percentage of that funding to be spent on really it's early intervention services, so HIV testing, and also hepatitis C support. And so we have some of that funding that works with our is provided to our programs and many other programs in the city to work with substance users. And that's the system of prevention.
This is less readable on the screen. Usually it's often the other way around. But this is a list of service categories, mostly here on the yellow and green quadrants, that are funded by, thank you, Tracy.
Sorry.
That are we wanted to provide a list of our service categories as well to follow the previous slide. So this is a slide that someone on the HIV Health Services Planning Council have seen before. We prepared this as we were discussing and beginning planning for the Affordable Care Act. The services listed on the red side are all those services that are covered by ACA, and on the yellow are current HIV health services categories that may become ineligible for Ryan White reimbursement based on it being available as provided through the Affordable Care Act expansion of Medi-Cal, and by those insurance programs provided under Covered California. And the green are those that remain eligible for Ryan White services. So just to go through those on the yellow section, outpatient ambulatory medical care, which is how HRSA labels what we generally refer to as primary care, outpatient primary care, home health care. The next four are listed in red for good reason, which is asterisk here. The oral health care, the medical case management, which includes treatment adherence, outpatient mental health services and outpatient substance abuse services. We're still waiting for some definitive instruction and direction from both HRSA and the state. For the most part, these things are potentially eligible for coverage through expanded services, but if, like for the instance of oral health care for DentalCal, DentalCal will cover emergency services. But anything beyond emergency services, there's a share of cost, and for a lot of clients, it's prohibitively expensive and creates a barrier for them getting care. So we're still investigating that and trying to get more direction from HRSA about what kind of documentation will be required and what will be allowable as still covered. But I'm assuming that there will be something that will be worked out as we go through this transition period. But not much has changed in that service category in the last year. Medical case management. The coverage of this is going to be determined by the level of education and licensure of the person providing the service. It can also might be available, will be available through Medi-Cal, but will likely be capitated in some way. So, again, we're investigating how we're going to move forward with continuing to provide that based on the license and education level of the provider, and also based on the ability to wrap around and still fund with running away. Same with outpatient mental health services and outpatient substance abuse services, the same logic as with the medical case management. These other categories are very much a part of our system of care, but are still eligible clearly for Ryan White service funding. Facility-based care, which is not an acute hospital setting, hospice care, all housing services, food bank and delivered meals, psychosocial services, legal services, case management, non-medical, which we locally identify as benefits counseling and money management, outreach services, emergency financial assistance, and residential substance abuse services, which we only fund with general fund at this point. We moved that over in 2007. Next slide. So this is the spectrum of engagement and care among persons diagnosed with HIV between the years of 2009 and 2012 here in San Francisco. So if you look at the beautiful colors here, the red is 2009, and then 10, 11, and 12, the orange, dark blue, and purple. The thing that you'll see that stands out, the first and the left is new diagnosis, and then linked to care within 6 months of diagnosis, retained in care for 3 to 6 months, retained in care for 6 to 12 months after linkage, viral suppression within 12 months among persons retained in care for 3 visits, viral suppression among all new diagnosis. And notice how the viral load suppression in both of these last two graphs has really increased over this four-year period that's being examined. This is a little bit different than how the national cascade is sort of put forward, because that looks at all cases cumulatively, while this is just the new diagnosis for each of these 4 years. But with this, I think we get a better, more succinct snapshot and more specific data, because if we were to look at cumulative cases in San Francisco over time, it would be hard for us to get the documentation we need for people that move away and how they may stay retained or how they may change over time. So HIV prevention section covers everything within this spectrum of engagement, and HIV health services, everything but the first graph on the left, everything from linkage to care.
So this slide goes into greater detail about the contractors that provide prevention, HIV prevention. If you look at the bottom row, you'll see people at risk, new diagnoses, linkage and retention and care, and viral suppression. So that's aligned with the spectrum of engagement and care. So just showing you what programs and activities are related to each of those areas. So it's a little bit condensed from the previous slide in terms of those areas, in terms of those services. That's not the right word. In terms of that part of care. So in the first column then, for people at risk, you'll see that the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, as I mentioned earlier, provides HIV testing and also Stonewall addresses the drivers, as I had mentioned earlier. San Francisco AIDS Foundation, just as a detail, also subcontracts to GLIDE and also St. James Infirmary. So that's part of a collaboration that provides HIV testing. That same collaboration provides syringe services, and we call it Syringe Access Collaborative, or SAC. And then Alliance Health Project, I spoke of that already, and they provide HIV testing. And you'll see in the next two columns, just to be specific, on-site testing as well as mobile testing. And I'll come back to the top row in a minute. City Clinic, I mentioned, Instituto Familiar de la Raza, and Asian and Pacific Islander Wellness Center. Those are our primary contracts, but each of them has a collaboration within them. So for the AIDS Foundation, addressing new diagnoses, it includes Magnan, Glide, St. James, and Agilas also has a collaboration with San Francisco AIDS Foundation. The foundation does the testing, and Agilas does more of the recruitment linkage into services. Let's see, what else do I want to highlight? I guess I'll just look down at Asian and Pacific Islander Wellness Center. You'll see that this is the TransThrive program, and subcontractors are Instituto Familia de la Raza and ELLA. Mobile testing is, so testing is done on-site at each of these locations, and there's also mobile testing that's done. And then you'll see in linkage and retention and care, the programs you might have heard of, Black Brothers Esteem and Dream, are both part of the African American Special Project that I mentioned earlier. Let me just highlight a few things. Positive Forces also is a prevention with positives program out of the foundation. And Shanti is part of the special project I mentioned that's for gay men or men who have sex with men in general. So Shanti is an important part of that. Let's see. So then finally, so then there's linkage and retention and care. Those are the services there. And then viral suppression. So these services are provided to support people to stay in care, to have access to treatment, to support adherence to treatment, trying to address barriers to treatment. And, you know, if there's questions about these specifics, we can go into it later, but I won't read each of them.
So can you go back to Oscar? Thanks. So what Tracy showed for prevention, can you go back to the comment? We didn't prepare for HIV health services because we don't. We usually just provide information at the service category level and not the contractor or agency level. And as I mentioned earlier, all of our programs for services and support services either directly link people to care or directly help people become and remain virally suppressed or provide important support services, food and legal services and things that you wouldn't think that are directly have a great influence in helping to provide the quality of life and engagement for our clients. So our a similar graph for HIV health services would look different, but it would be all of our programs really spread all over these five bars here on the right. From there on over, I just wanted to go over that for that comparison.
And we've struggled with how to represent that, yeah. Because I don't know if those of you who were at the presentation we made, I think it was at the full council, where we tried, yeah, Celinda and I did it, we tried to use dots to show, like, this many programs are, you know, addressing new diagnoses, this many for linkage to care, and that didn't really represent it very well either, so we haven't quite figured that out. But the idea that we're trying to show is that there's a lot of overlap in that, you know, for HIV prevention, it goes from testing all the way to viral suppression. That's all about the priorities for prevention. And with health services, it's, you know, a notch down and then all the way to viral suppression.
And it's everything from food to housing to people to primary care. So, okay. So this is to show the collaborative efforts that we are currently engaged in between HIV prevention and HIV services or care. We have prevention with positives in our centers of excellence. When we put that out to bid the second time in 2010, about 5 years ago, we did that RFP jointly, and HIV prevention put funding into that RFP to provide prevention of positive services within the COEs, and we have a little bit more detail on that on the following slides. They've also supplemented funding for some of our programs that have linkage to care embedded in those services, and there's a slide coming up on that as well. We're trying to represent here are the numerous ways in which we are already collaboratively joining to RFP our services, combine our services to avoid duplication of services, and to help complement each other's programs with funding.
The next thing is the EPI profile. I think it was maybe 5 years ago that we decided that it made sense to do one epi profile for both sets of plans. And so we convened a group to look at how should HIV in San Francisco be represented in the plan. So it's a collaboration of both sets of groups, and we've continued to do that over time. And I'm going to kind of jump into the last bullet for a second. And so thank you for bringing the email that we received yesterday or today or whatever about integrated planning. So that will be one of the tasks that we're going to be able to do together, which is thinking about how we write a joint plan. And that will be a really exciting opportunity, especially because I think, I can't remember what the timeline was, but I think it's very possible we'll be one council at that time, and that will facilitate the writing of that. And that leads to...
And planning council collaborations, this obviously is a very broad example of that. We also have had joint presentations of the independent councils. We have members that have overlapped and served on both councils at the same time. And we get some reports from both prevention and HIV services at our council. And there's just a lot of ways that we work together and help provide information in numerous ways that we're, when we present data or information to bring to our council, HIV health services, we are often turning towards staff in HIV prevention to get more information to complement that or add to that or make it more complete and provide the same for them at times as well. So just underscore that. And then the next page. So this is a little bit more specifics on the previous slide. So this is some of the, this represents the funding from HIV prevention services. And HIV health services that go to our COEs. So the HIV health services funds 7 different COEs. 5 of them have PWP funding from the HIV prevention section. And you'll see here that each of these have the dollar amount represented and the percentage here. For some of these programs that have a smaller total amount of COE funding, it may look like the PWP piece is much larger, but it's a reflection of the PWP funding fluctuated some, but some of our COEs, based on the UBC, they serve a much larger funding than others. Each of our COEs, to provide a little bit of background information, when we put these out to bid the first and the second time, they specifically, the RFP was unique in a way that it didn't just describe an RFP for COE services in general, but for 7 COEs specifically. And each of those referenced a very specific neighborhood and or target population or communities that they were to serve. And these were communities that had been identified by HIV health services and the planning council and were involved in the creation of the COE services the first time 10 years ago, 12 years ago?
2005.
Yeah.
2005 is
10
years ago.
10 years ago, thank you very much. And we really focused on those communities and those populations who were experiencing health disparities, and then the definition of a client to qualify for COE services was to be at the lower end of the federal poverty level, at 150% of the federal poverty level. For most of our running away services, the threshold is 400% of FPL. To be at 150% and to meet the definition of a severe need, which means living with comorbidities of active mental health diagnosis and or active or recent substance use history, or to be representative of a community that was experiencing health disparities. So you'll see here we have a Black Health COE, a Native American COE, a Tenderloin COE that focuses on the Tenderloin neighborhood, but also the transgender community and the Asian and Pacific Islander community. The Mission COE is neighborhood focused, but also focusing on the Latino community, and particularly the monolingual Spanish-speaking Latino community. And the Chronic Care COE are for those that have more advanced health needs and for the most part are living with HIV longer and older folks.
I just would like to add on the previous slide that, as I mentioned earlier, that you know we call this prevention with positives, but it really is similar to the supportive services that you had described earlier, that Dean had described earlier, that you all, that HIV Health Services Planning Council has prioritized, like food and transportation, et cetera. That's what prevention with positives should be looking like in a different sort of way, but it's supportive services as well. So it's about, I feel like I said this 18 times, but you know, what do people need in order to feel connected to their healthcare? And so that's what prevention with positives is. It can be very broadly defined.
The next slide, these are community services. There are two programs that get funding from both HIV Health Services and HIV Prevention for those. This is a reflection of HIV Prevention Services being given more flexibility with their funding for funding treatment as prevention-focused programs, which made it possible for them to begin to jointly fund some of these programs that are providing linkages to care. And this is a fairly recent, in the last 3 years, 2 or 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start with this again. So this slide is a very busy slide on your handout, but to simplify it a little bit, in the last HIV prevention plan, which some of you might have been involved with writing, we tried to conceptualize the way we look at prevention and care, really, more broadly, not looking at just people who are HIV positive and linking them to services, but people who are HIV negative and linking them to appropriate services that you know they're interested in, and also providing ongoing support and care. So, or support and service. So, in the first column, you'll see any door is the right door. So, the idea was that people could, you know, our planning and our big picture is that people can enter into any door and be connected with the services that they need. So this is highlighting linkage, support, and care navigation, health insurance enrollment, benefits eligibility, and then that would link to. Now you know what, Oscar, just go ahead and put it all up. The red represents strategies for anyone, regardless of status, and then the green is for people who are HIV negative, and blue is spelling out specifically services for HIV-positive people. But the idea here is that people come in through screening, assessment, and referral, are supported into care through case management, et cetera, and risk reduction. And that's really a cycle of, you know, support and ongoing assessment of where people are and what do they need next and what referrals are important for wherever they are. What is the most important issue? Is it housing? Is it medication adherence? Is it injection risks, et cetera? So ensuring that it's dynamic and continues to meet people's needs. And then finally, the goal of all of this is improved health outcomes or positive health outcomes if you want to look at it. And the plan did adopt the Getting to Zero language, which is zero stigma for anyone based on who they are, based on HIV status, et cetera. Zero new HIV infections and zero AIDS-related deaths. So, again, it's complicated, but it's trying to show the comprehensiveness of the thinking for HIV prevention. Okay, so now this is really the meat of it. This is right why we came, is to talk about resources, and I think Oscar and Dean and I all thought it was important to have some context to work with. So this is the current funding for HIV prevention. Again, this is, you know, the part of the branch, Community Health Equity and Promotion, CHEP. But this is the funding that we currently have for HIV prevention, that's to HIV prevention. So $5.5 million comes from our CDC cooperative agreement. Is allocated to what we call Category A. I was always so confused by the Category A, B, and D, and F that Health Services has had, and now we have A, B, and C. It's really, I should have paid attention. But category A is broad. It's really about HIV testing, about support for people who are negative. It can also be people who are for services for people who are positive. And that's allocated based on the living AIDS cases in 2010. I think it was 2008, actually, but anyway, somewhere around there. And then the second category is 513,000, which is specifically for HIV testing in medical settings. So ensuring that people can access HIV testing wherever they are seeking medical care. And this only goes to San Francisco. I should have pointed out that the first category is for San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin. And I'll show you the breakdown in a minute. And then $8 million is San Francisco General Fund, and that's just to San Francisco. And I think prior to the budget cuts we received from CDC, we had probably around, I'm going to say, $3 million from the city to do HIV prevention. But over time, with the cuts, as you all know, because you all advocated, the mayor and the Board of Supervisors added back general fund to ensure that HIV prevention was whole. So that's gone up significantly in the last 4 years. I will turn it over to Dean to describe the next.
So this is our level of funding currently. We're right at the end of our like fiscal year, so this is for 2014. Our fiscal year for Part A begins next week, and we probably won't get the full award of our grant until April or May. Dealing with HRSA when budget issues get tight. But you'll see here our total amount, and this is programmatic funding for client services. Currently is about $26 million. The top box here on the left, $14.307,795. This is Part A, and this is for all three counties. I should specify here. It's very similar to Tracy's previous page. This is the amount of services for clients in all three counties, San Francisco, San Mateo, and Marin.
Can I ask a question? Can you explain the difference between Part A and Part B? I kind of know, but I don't totally.
Sure, absolutely. Really good question. Part B is also federal funds, but they give them to the state, and then the state allocates and directs to counties and local health jurisdictions.
That's B?
So that's B.
Okay.
Yeah, so this comes to us from the state office folks.
And A is just
federal, and it comes directly just to the EMA, which is the same boundary as yours, which is the three counties.
Can you give Jack an idea of what Part B covers?
Yeah, so Part B, we currently, it can be applied to any of the HRSA service categories. We currently fund primary medical care, food. We're funding psychosocial support. We just recently moved that to general fund. Food, ambulatory outpatient medical care, therapeutic monitoring, which is early intervention services. But at our state site visit yesterday, mm-hmm. we just learned that there's a big change with that, so we're going to have to make some changes around that service category as it's recently being redefined. Mm-hmm. More on that later. And we use it for some funding that, to go back a little bit in history, the state, when they got the Part B funds, prior to 2009, they would give some of it directly to the EMA for the county, and it used to go to us for all three counties, which has changed. And then they also had Part B that they retained and complemented with state general fund that they directly provided to contractors across the state and here in San Francisco to provide some funding. And some of those were included the therapeutic monitoring and what was at the time called residential AIDS license facility, which was programs and facilities providing RCFCI, residential care facility for the chronically ill. So we, in 2009, the budget took the general fund away from that, and what the state did at that time is they gave us all the Part B money directly and to each county directly. So at that time, it started coming directly to San Francisco. San Mateo and Marin got their own Part B where before it used to come to us. And at that time, we picked up, with a combination of Part A and Part B funding, those services that used to be directly funded by the state with their Part B dollars. But it's available for any service category recognized by HRSA, and we fund the facility-based care, which used to be the RALF funding, food, another program that was started and initiated by the state called AIDS Home Case Management, which is a home and community-based care, which provides a nurse, social worker to go to people's homes directly to provide basic health assessments and case management, and probably one or two that I'm forgetting, but I can give more detail on that later if you like. But it's available for any service category recognized by HRSA.
Yeah, I guess this relates to both. So for the A's in both sides, they cover all three counties, and is that the same kind of proportionate?
We're going to talk about that. We have data.
Sorry.
Is that
okay?
It's
a really good question.
Sure.
In fact,
and then our third bullet is the general fund, which, like I mentioned, has been added back by your efforts. We had a small amount, but most all of that is add back that we've gotten in the last 3 years. And then the next slide is Pete's question, which is the allocation within the both sections within the three-county EMA. And you'll see that it's based on living AIDS cases, and it's very similar. That with San Francisco, it's about 88-89%. In San Mateo, it's around 8%. And it's about 3.5%. And these are reflected that they're just sampled at different times.
And I'd like to add that when San Francisco initially received the funding, this is the first time in a cooperative agreement that San Mateo and Marin have been part of it. Prior to this, it was specifically to San Francisco, and Marin and San Mateo were funded through the state. And then they were not funded at all. And then they were given an option that they could be funded through the state or through San Francisco. And they looked at their options, and it seemed like it made the most sense to go through San Francisco. And so then what we did as a collab, the three groups, we looked at where we should be funding. And these are AIDS cases from 2013, but when we were funded, it was 20, when did we first get our funding? 2012. So that's the data that we used initially to allocate the funds. San Francisco has received, let's say that differently. Our funding has been cut over time. We'll show you that in a minute. The first year we did hand over that cut to San Mateo and Marin as well, but the next 2 years we did not, because the amount of funding that they were both getting was so small that we really wanted to make sure they had enough to run programs. And so we absorbed that a little bit. We had taken a 10% sort of administration fee, because we had to manage and do contracts and stuff like that, and then we gave that up. So that's why some of this is not exactly right, because it's more recent AIDS cases, and also, or no, I shouldn't say not exactly right, because it is what it is. It's not exactly matching for HIV prevention. Does that answer the question, Ken?
It does.
Okay, and this is some recent history of funding of our grant for purposes of simplicity. We look just at our Part A, which is you can see from a couple pages back of our history of our funding. So you'll see in 2011 we got about $25.6 million. The next year it was $20.8 million, and then it was $17.9 million, and this last year it was $15.9 million. This is the full Part A grant. This is all three counties, and this includes the administrative component and the planning council support and everything, which is a whole enchilada. So cumulatively, looking at those 4 years, you see like a 62% reduction in funding, as opposed to if it had stayed at the line from the first year. And the trend is comparable.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we do see a very similar percentage from 2011 to 2015 for HIV prevention. So, the federal government has looked at, and San Francisco's doing a great job, but we're, there's an effect of that. It's the prevention paradox. When you're doing a good job, then you also get a funding cut. And I think that it's a really important conversation to have. It's like, what do you need in order to maintain the success that you have? And it's been amazing that the people have gone to talk with the Board of Supervisors and the mayor about that, and they have added the funds back so that we've remained whole. But we did want you to see this, that in 2011 we had $8.8 million in HIV prevention from CDC, and now we're at 5.5. It's significant. And we'll have another decrease in 2016. It's the smallest one of all, so we're not as worried about it, but it's still there. And we don't know what's going to happen after that. So for us, in HIV prevention, it's five-year cooperative agreements. And so the FOA, which is the funding opportunity announcement, will come out, I'm thinking, next year, 2016, and we'll apply for it to begin January 2017. And at this point, we don't know what CDC's thinking in terms of their priorities, where, you know, what's going on, and where are they with funding levels. We haven't heard anything about that. There's a big conference at the end of the year in December, and so I'm hoping that that will reveal where we're at with that. Yeah. And now time for questions.
So just looking at the raw numbers and trying to get a sense of the city backfills, so to speak, it seems like with prevention it's about $8 million, and with care it's about $9 million. Yet those don't seem to be in any way correlated to the cuts, are they? I mean, in other words, were the backfills in both programs for all those 4 years you're showing us, they backfilled everything that was cut from you guys?
Yes, they backfilled everything.
So
go ahead.
If you look at the difference in the amount from 11, 12 to 14, 15, 10, that's about $9 million. And
I think what I missed is just that prevention got cut, obviously, more, given how much backfill they've got now,
well,
as a proportion of the full budget.
You know what, that was something I wanted to clarify, is that prior to the reductions, there was general fund allocated to HIV prevention, about $3 million. So I think, from my memory, so this $8 million includes both what we were already getting for HIV prevention plus the add back.
I see.
So I could do the math for you, not right in this moment, because
right.
I don't have a memory right now.
So yours is not all backfill, while
that's right.
While care is all back.
Is that true?
Mostly all. We had less than a million on the general fund before.
I mean, if anything, it just, it's a great information because it makes us so much more aware of what the city is doing for our community.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions for Dean and Tracy? Let the record show Ken Hornby has arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, item number 7, developing a shared culture. Now, we realize we had a comprehensive conversation around this the last time, and it lasted quite a while. We have no intention of repeating that. But if after this presentation there is any thoughts or feelings you have about what you've learned today in relation to that conversation, we're giving you an opportunity to say so now. So are there any lingering thoughts or feelings about the two councils and the shared and not so shared aspects? Yes, Mark?
Well, since there's nothing about shared culture, I thought I'd just say something that's not really part of the agenda item, but I think it's a pretty awesome thing to see. In Laura's handout, if we go to page 6, it shows the what Part A unified prevention care planning bodies are currently in existence. And it points out two of them, Chicago and LA. Clearly there's a bunch of Part B statewide planning bodies, but I just think that that's important for us to realize that this group, San Francisco, the two councils are way ahead of the curve, and so that what we're doing is actually really exciting and forward-looking and proactive, and that was just really exciting for me. I think in my mind I knew that Chicago and LA were two of them. I kind of thought they were two of many, or two of a few at least. So I just wanted to point that out, that this is really forward-moving, ahead of the national curve, I guess, per usual.
That is great. And it's an opportunity for innovation and new thinking and all sorts of things. So you can make something great out of two greats. Okay. Terrific. Anything else? All right. Item number 8, planning council support, and the role of the HHSPC director.
Okay, I'm sad that the person who requested this agenda item actually is not present, but hopefully this will be of use to the prevention council members and CHEP staff who are here. You know, this was brought up at the very end of the meeting. It said there was maybe some confusion on the prevention side about what is the role of planning council support, and specifically what is the role of the planning council director. I think the phrase was, because when I speak, a lot of times DPH finds that unnerving. So I want to make sure that there's clarity. Yeah, that when I speak, a lot of times DPH will find that unnerving. I think it was a specific phrase that was used. So I want to make sure that there is nothing unnerving or confusing, that it's all just totally transparent. Because I think my role is pretty clear for the CARE Council and certainly for HHS. And I can see how it could be confusing or even unnerving for folks who just aren't used to my position, my program, and someone like myself who does not have a vote who even talks during council meetings. So let's just go through it. I have the FAQ right here. It's divided into 3 sections. I'm not going to read this whole thing. As far as what the Planning Council Support Program is, I think that a lot of prevention folks are already familiar with what the HIV Care Council Support does, because that's also provided possibly in different ways, but that's also provided to the Prevention Council. So you'll see at the top the actual HRSA language from HRSA guidance around planning councils. That this is a paragraph that says funds can be used to create these support programs. All right, so take a quick scan of that first paragraph. So my program, which includes our administrative manager, Allie Cohn, our community services manager, Dave Jordan, our program assistant, soon to be program coordinator, mm-hmm. Jen Cust, and our website coordinator, Matthew Simmons. We do administrative support for all meetings, including minutes and recordings. We do administrative support for all care council activities, including needs assessments and all the things related to that, which is, you know, focus groups, outreach. When needed, this hasn't really been needed for many, many years. We can certainly provide support for the development of best practices and standards of care. Also, something that hasn't been done in a survey format, but if it does happen, we can certainly provide support for a grantee assessment, etc. We track and maintain the Care Council's activities and goals in 3 ways per the HRSA mandate. The HRSA mandate has 3 major activities: prioritization of service categories and resource allocation to those service categories, as well as needs assessment and other activities. We also track and maintain the goals that the HHSPC has created for itself, as well as goals that are noted within our annual grant application and our 3-year plan. We also look over all the PMT, compliance with local and state mandates, conflict of interest, 700 forms, which are our declarations of interest, as well as rules of respectful engagement, cultural humility, and Robert's Rules of Order. We just had a training on Monday. We track membership and council seats. We do support for agenda planning and presentations to the full council, which means a lot of time I'll put together agendas for upcoming committees and full council meetings based on either what has been our regular ongoing items or what's been developed by the committee at the prior meeting. It then goes through our 2 committee or council or work group co-chairs to adjust, add, or subtract as they see fit, and then it's present in draft form beginning at that meeting. So I put together these things, but I am neither the initial creator and certainly not the person who actually approves that agenda. Okay, we have done support for the generation of motions and amendments. So a lot of times people have the specific ideas they want to accomplish in motions and amendments, but they're not sure how to phrase them. So certainly Planning Council can jump in there and provide phrasing that's appropriate. Again, we don't generate the motions and amendments. We're only there to support council members in doing what they're mandated to do. We facilitate the steering retreat and our annual summit. The summit is our big deal where we do our prioritization and our allocation. We have trainings. We do oversight of the website. We have presentations to the council by request. And then in the absence of leadership, we can certainly facilitate meetings. That's really something that I prefer not to do. It's really something that we'll only do if really requested. In the absence of leadership, I'd actually prefer council members step up rather than co-chairs. But something we can do. Any questions on what the Planning Council Support Program actually is and does? No. Okay, on to more in-depth questions. What's the role of the director? Why is the title of the position HHSPC director and not the Planning Council Support Program director? Who oversees me? And why does this council staff comment during meetings? So you'll see in the first program, in the first paragraph, that this position oversees the program, obviously. I think the main point here is that I direct the council processes. I don't direct the council's decisions or any individual votes. Does that make sense for folks not familiar with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the second thing, the title of the position, it's been a source of kind of controversy over the years, so I might as well just kind of name it. You know, this position was written by several people, DPH, but also former council members. One of them, Randy Allgaier, who later moved on to become this position. So this position's title was written way back when. I did not create this title. I know for some directors, this has been a very important title. They would only take this job if it was the director of the council rather than director of council support, because they felt that someone who's the director of the council is going to automatically be able to do things like schedule presentations, to be able to represent the council at certain places, unless they had that title. I certainly know that, you know, my predecessor and ones before him felt very strongly about that. Strong enough to actually call co-chairs in to have a discussion with HHS when HHS had some pushback about that. That's the past. My own perspective is actually, I don't care. I could be the director of Planning Council Support. I could be the director of Policy and Procedures. I could be number one servant. Doesn't really matter to me. So that's my own personal opinion. I hate that there's actually controversy attached to a position title that I inherited, had nothing to do with making it. I'm happy to have it, but I have no particular personal or professional attachment to it. Any questions about the actual title?
That is really helpful. I mean, here I am, a council co-chair, and I never knew that whole history, so thank you for that.
I think council members are just kind of used to it.
Oh, we just accepted it. Yeah.
So part of the job description that was written by, it was by the co-chairs and by the planning council membership and council member when all this thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the person living with HIV and AIDS was part of that whole implementation of the contract with the AIDS office and with Randy Allgaier, Laura Thomas, Brad Young, which is passed, and so it's with the community, not.
Yeah, Randy, when he was in this position, he made that really clear to me in a conversation that this came from the Planning Council and those community members because they wanted it to be a really empowered position. And, of course, that came full circle when he himself took that position 15 years later. It's interesting. All right, so who supervises me? I actually am directly supervised by my one direct supervisor, which is the executive director of Shanti. However, evaluation of me includes that person, as well as the three co-chairs, Channing Celeste, Mary Lawrence, and Chip. So they will feed into the evaluation. Because, honestly, they see a lot more of my work than Koshik does, so it should include them. Mm-hmm. I get my work from the Planning Council, specifically co-chairs of councils, but really any work group, any committee, the full council can assign me things. Make sense? Okay. And as far as why I talk during meetings, I provide input in a way that in some ways parallels DPH, at least DPH on the care side, where you know there's no vote there. So I will put my voice in when it has to do with big picture ideas, when it has to do with processes, when it has to do with making sure that the council is able to accomplish its goals in the timeliest and most successful ways. I will not put my opinion in when it comes to our two key goals. So I'm not going to give any kind of opinions around how you guys should prioritize service categories. I'm not going to be putting my two cents in about how much money should go to each service category. That is not something I should be doing. If that ever happens from staff, we should certainly be called on it. We only put our two cents in when it's down to processes, big pictures, and how we can be more successful moving forward. Make sense?
And to just add to that, the other thing that you and the other staff do is to provide a historic perspective when there was a question like, how do we get to this point, or what was the decision we made 2 or 3 years ago that affects this, and how do we get to that, and that's very useful for our deliberative processes and our planning, because that's usually where a lot of the information resides.
Thank you.
I'll use an example with the merge. I have been personally pro-merge since forever, since I was a council member myself. I made sure to hold my opinion back, and I provided support to whoever wanted support around that idea, whether they were at first not in favor or whether they were in favor. I didn't actually feel comfortable coming out of the pro-merge closet until after the CARE Council actually approved it. And that's when I felt I was able to comfortably say, oh, good, I'm so glad this has happened. So that's just an example. Okay, so moving forward, why is Planning Council support provided by a CBO rather than DPH? So there's actually HRSA language in there around guidance. I mean, around HRSA guidance around this particular topic. And the basic idea is that there might be some conflict with the same person being providing administrative support to an independent community planning body who is also receiving, who is also the recipient of directives from that body. There's also a little bit about grantee assessment. I think it's less relevant there, but it is important theoretically, simply because we haven't done the kind of in-depth survey-based grantee assessment for a while. We had to do it in a different way. But if that were to ever happen again, that would certainly be an issue. So that's the HRSA language. Just a couple points there that I think it's pretty well known to everyone that, you know, the Planning Council is a community planning body. The mandate rests with the Planning Council, which is different than the HLB Prevention Council, where the mandate rests with DPH. And that's a very different. Those are two very different things. Fortunately, in San Francisco, since DPH really holds community process so dearly, the differences actually have not been stark at all. There have been practically no differences that I can see from the outside between the HIV Care Council and the HIV Prevention Council. But I guess legally, legislatively, however, there's marked difference. And then finally, here that we are provided by the contractor, Shanti. We've certainly been awarded the contract over and over again, mainly because of our experience, but also because Shanti is known for its peer support model and also volunteer management. So I just point out that the CARE Council is, for the most part, I think every member should be considered as a volunteer. Their agency may or may not allow them to come here, but these are volunteer hours that they're putting forward. They're not getting paid for this. And it's also peer-based. Certainly there are leaders. There are co-chairs, but it's every single person is equal to every other person, and everyone has one vote. So in some ways, that's why it was a good fit for this program. In some ways, that's what makes it a community advisory body. And I'd also have to say, when I look at those two things, that the CARE Council is a group of volunteers that are peer-based, not only is that like really exciting thing for me to see, it's the same thing that I see when I look at the HIV Prevention Council as well. So I see already like a lot of commonality. So it's exciting to envision the idea that my program could actually provide support to a merged council, because I see a lot of things already in common between the two. Anyway, that's the future. Any questions on that section or this whole FAQ?
Yeah, well, comment, thinking, because Dean brought it up. I think it is also important for us to acknowledge the importance of not having term memberships on CARE and how that's added to this historical memory, because we have had changes lots of times, and one of the things we found most frustrating at times is keeping that continuity or bringing up, wait a minute, we need to have some continuity, and by having and we all acknowledge that you don't immediately step into the role and can function without some learning curve. So I just put 2 cents there.
Thank you, Kevin. Any other comments? Jason?
I just wanted to make sure the record is clear that nobody from the CPH said that we were, what was the word you used?
Unnerving.
when you speak, that wasn't said by anybody from DPH. I think that's important that gets framed. Right.
Frank doesn't work for DC?
No, he doesn't work for CDC. So I just want that to be clear, because we don't feel... I don't know why I want to say disheveled, but under...
You are never disheveled.
Thank you.
My second comment is about... I think that it would be helpful maybe to talk about at some point what the SFDPH staff has, what our role has been in terms of council support, just to understand the differences, and there are differences. In fact, Mark and I talked after the last meetings. One thing is, as a government employee, I often try to step back. I mean, I never share my opinion either, similar to what Mark is saying. In my opinion, I represent the health department, I might say, from the health department's point of view, this blah, 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 or that blah, 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 but you will never hear me say, well, I, Tracy, think this. So it's very similar in that way, and but there's a lot of differences, too, and I think that would be interesting to discuss. And maybe it's at the joint executive rather than here. I don't know. So both presidents.
Anyone else? Thank you, Mark. Next item up, consultants. We had some discussion last time around this topic, but we thought we should bring it back as a group and look at it. There was some discussion of using a consulting firm that both councils have used, and there have been distinct different experiences with that consultant. And also, I think that we are pretty much in agreement. We were pretty much in agreement the last time that most people wanted to have a consultant for the fact that it would be an independent voice, and it would be someone who could look at both councils without prejudice, and perhaps see things or help us work on things that we might find very difficult on our own because of emotional and practical reasons. We have two councils that are very set in their ways, and somebody independent of those two councils may be extremely helpful. Is there anyone that's in disagreement of that?
Oh, no, I had a question.
Okay.
My question is, what is the nature of this vote? Are we voting whether or not to have one?
Yes.
Okay.
How we're going to go about it,
okay.
Too. So we have to have that broader broad conversation, finish that up, and then discuss how we're going to go about hiring a consultant.
Okay. I'm in favor.
So is everyone in the room in agreements, at least mostly, with what I just said? Yes. Okay. Then I'd like to hear people's thoughts on how we should go about getting a consultant, where we should look, who we should have. Jack.
I guess I'm curious about whether or not there is some stable of consultants that exist that we could pull from that the CARE Council has worked with in the past that it's comfortable with. I think DPH or whatever that was provided the last consultant and that didn't go so well. So I'm just curious if there is some sort of group of people we should be looking at. And I think that the last time we had this conversation, we had talked about it being harder on company and it being an organization that both of our councils have worked with and have worked with. It seems like we both worked with well. So I'm just curious about that. Bring that up.
Work.
I mentioned this to Dean, but we did just recently work with Compass Point. I think that's a potential place. I don't know if they do this kind of work, honestly, but not only has I guess Dave worked directly with them, I know that my agency has had good experience with Compass Point.
Do we know what our budget is for this?
we've allocated $20,000 to $30,000 from our quality management program this year, based on the fact that Prevention allocated funding for the work group last year. So HIV Health Services was going to pull that out of our some identified savings. We have an quality management program this should be sort of what we're thinking of, and we're thinking that should get us through 7, 8, 9 months of this sort of support based on past context. We also, I asked Irene Carmona from the contracts section for the RFQ list, which we have, of those folks who have submitted to an RFQ for professional consultant services with DPH and were deemed qualified. So there are about 21 groups on this list, including a few that we've mentioned. Some of these are very specific and, you know, only do like social marketing or only do grant writing and wouldn't be options, but, you know, based on the discussion we had a while ago, looking at this option and following up with some of these and other ideas people might have. Sorry, just put that up there.
Charles.
So, there are two questions for Dean. Compass Point does a facilitator or facilitation and also Harding Company. Those are the two main body that work with, I think, with prevention and care before. I'm not sure about prevention, but with care. Why don't, I'm proposing that the committee should pick at least three and go from there.
So I'm curious, and I may not understand their role or function, but AETC or ATEC?
ATEC.
Is that not kind of the appropriate role that they might have?
You know? Let me speak to this because I work.
Could you explain to me what that is?
Yeah, oh, if you work for them, I've never been at.
Wait, what? No. I'm right. No, you know, 2% of my time, I'm a trainer for them. So that stands for AIDS Education and Training Center. It's actually it's a Ryan White funded Part F or something. Ryan White funded program. It's really for training, not so much for meeting facilitation. But it's a great question.
So it seems to me, while it's good that we've had some, but here's where we would look to you guys, Dean and Tracy, to say, who have you had good experiences with?
We recently worked jointly with Prevention, with Harder and Company on the Healthcare Reform Task Force, and several of you were involved in that, and that seemed like a really good outcome, certainly, and a good process as far as I'm aware and know. We've used them, not in the recent past, but in the past for helping to develop some of our best practice guides and other things that we've developed over the years. And the standards of care. A lot of that was done in-house, but they helped provide some of the structure.
Center of Excellence?
There's also another consultant on here that helped us do that, too. The Center of Excellence.
I think the thing that strikes me is it's not so much just the company, but it's the individual. Because in my memory, which sometimes I lose it a little bit, but it's a long memory.
Really? I've never seen you do that.
I remember that all Harder and Company are not the same. So I think that's something we have to feed into the mix, too, is if y'all can give us more specifics within a company itself.
Right. Next I have Mark and then Chip and John. I guess in some ways I would echo what Ken says. I know that Planning Council Support has had a really positive experience with Harder and Company. I know that there are mixed feelings around Harder and Company in the Care Council, but the most recent experience with Harder and Company was with the task force, and I really thought that they did an excellent job with the task force and keeping everyone on point. I think if we unbury the distant past, I know the Care Council has had challenges with Harder and Company around our needs assessments and around the staff who are working with the different work groups. But I think that really just means that whoever is chosen, I mean, how this is chosen keeps in mind what Ken said, that I think it's individuals can be, it's not so much the agency, I guess, it's going to be the individual, because the task force experience, I think, was just very positive for everyone who was at that table.
Yeah, I want to go with follow up on what Charles said, and that is that I think I would like to see at least two, I really would like to see three choices. Maybe a couple we're familiar with and one that we're not. We can choose in a variety of ways. We can have a section of this group interview these people or meet with them. We can have them come and talk to us next time. But I would like, I think people would feel more comfortable moving forward. I don't want to speak for other people, but for myself, if I actually look somebody in the eye and shake their hand, I get a better idea of what they are and hear them talk for a few minutes, even if they're on their best behavior, than I would by reputation. And of course, people have changed, and staff have changed over the years, and it may not even be the same people anymore would be doing this. But it's okay to let them know that we have had some difficulties in the past, and how would what do you want to do differently, or how would you see to it that we work more smoothly together?
Thank you, Jeff.
I'm curious about whether we could. I think goes on what you're saying too, Chip. Maybe what we could do is contact Harder & Company, contact Compass Point, ask them to send a tribute, right? And then maybe look at this list, because you said not everybody on this list is appropriate. If maybe whittle that down to just the being the people on there that are appropriate for this specific task, and just put it out there to all of them and be like, look, we've got this money, we want to hire a consultant, we're going to hold interviews, or send us an application or do whatever, like if we were hiring somebody for a job. And then either, if we get enough qualified people, we interview all of them or we interview some of them. I think it's a great idea to have six of us or something, like the co-chairs and a couple representatives from across section to interview folks over a day or a couple of days and then move forward. That's it.
Thanks, Jack. I have Demix, and then Tracy, and then Eric. Is it here? David.
Mary Lawrence.
And then...
Chip answered my question, which was the first reason I raised my hand. But based on what Jack just said, that process you were describing is actually how we go through selecting vendors that are on an approved RFQ list. So that would be conforming with the DPH contracting guidelines, which is always a good thing. So we could pursue that, and we could, if that's what everybody would like and feels most comfortable with, HHS and HIV prevention could pull a small group of staff together and maybe get some feedback from you on sort of what specifically you're wanting from a consultant to help with. I mean, I think we've got a pretty good idea, but it'd be good to hear you hammer some of the things out. We'd like to hear them propose and pitch at us. And contact the two you've mentioned specifically. Bring up the point that a few of you have referenced about specific staff who would be available and be involved, and that is part of our key decision making. And then also throw out a blanket sort of request for qualifications and interest to the others remaining of the other 19 of the 21 on this list based on what their speciality is. Because for each of these, there were, this RFQ included social marketing, technical assistance, research, program planning, grant writing. So it's probably going to be a pretty small list. That was 21. That might be doable, so we could do that and try to get that based on your feedback. Either get them to come or bring proposals or do both, depending on how much money you have and how they're able to respond. Okay.
Tracy?
So I'm going to repeat what other people said, but I think underscore it. I think that Charles's point is a good one, that this group should make the decision, or at least the recommendation, about the consultant. And I think it's important to have a really clear understanding of what you want, and everyone can engage in that. What is your expectation? What do you want this person to do? What is your hope that they will help you accomplish? And then I think just it probably will be a smaller group of people who end up making the recommendation, and I would just recommend support you to support them in that decision, because not everyone's going to like everyone, right? So I think that's just something to acknowledge, that, you know, that to give those people your support. I think that would make it go
David, Mary Lawrence, Wade, Mark, and Aaron.
Oh, I was just going to say that the person we worked with at Compass Point was actually a person who runs their own consultancy firm. Alicia Santa Maria, who did a facilitation training for us this past November. And based on my interactions with Compass Point, it sounds like they contract out to her for a lot of that stuff, or she's one of the primary. Alicia Santa Maria, I can give you her contact information. At least three of the people here at the table were in that training. I don't know if you want to speak to how you felt about it, or whether it's somebody you want to maybe potentially put out in the pool of consultants, because that's primarily what she does is facilitation and stuff. That's open to any of the three of you.
For me, I think it would be I want a stronger person to handle both counsel.
Okay. Mary Lux?
I was trying to just piggybacking also on what Tracy said. Just want to think through a way an efficient way to do this, so that this group does get a chance to weigh in. And one idea would be to have this interview process happen, but then have the whoever that committee is bring the top three proposals to this group and to show them to us, and then this group votes. That's an idea I wanted to put on the table. I think something that we want to see is not only a good group facilitation process, but a good set of documents that come out of it, so that anybody, if you couldn't come or in the future, can look back and have a clear idea of what the process was. So I would just want to be sure both of those are part of the proposal.
Wade next, then Mark, Eric, and Alan.
Mine was a question. So this person, this consultant, is going to be a permanent fixture, or is it going to be a person as needed?
Permanent fixture or as needed? Either way.
I think they would, in order to be effective, they have to be with us on the road, but I don't think necessarily we need them until the very end. We might get to a point where we're like, well, okay, we can
take it on ourselves.
And then there's the legality of all of it and the paperwork that has to be done, and that, I imagine, is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
That the consultant wouldn't necessarily be involved in, but at the very end, you know, of the negotiations or the process.
Mark?
Oh, I just wanted to remind the group, like, as far as process goes, there probably should be a motion, at least for the care council, so that allow the bringing of a facilitator on, so they could at least go to steering and be approved or not approved by the time this meets next month.
Could you repeat that last part, Mark? I'm sorry.
That this group may want to put a motion forward, at least for the care council, to allow for approval of a facilitator. To go forward to the care council steering committee.
I so move, knowing that Mark will write it up in such a way that it addresses what we're trying to say.
Do we have a second?
Second.
And discussion about that. Yes, Jack.
I don't know if it was clear or not, but I just wanted to say that when I said put it out to Compass Point and to Harder & Company, that they would actually say, this is the person that we would want to do this, not just like, oh yeah, we got your contract, we're going to send you whomever. Because I agree with Ken that, like, not all representatives are equal.
I think that, I got that clear from you.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I was thinking about it, too. Yeah.
So procedurally, would you have a motion on the table? Does that end the conversation.
It doesn't end it, but it does pause it. So this conversation is now about the motion on the floor.
This motion.
So you go back to the original speakers list after discussion and vote of this motion wraps up.
Any other discussion on this motion? Okay, Mark.
Would you like this to be a roll call vote?
I don't know. There's no money.
Actually, there is money. So the motion we're drafting will then go to both councils to then, or does it?
I can't speak for the permission council process.
Okay, so your care council will need to approve the onboarding of a consultant for the joint executive.
Yes, yeah, so it actually might just go to steering and stop there, but that'll be up to steering to determine if it needs to go even beyond the full council. But it definitely has to go to steering because it will involve steering in the future.
It should go to both council for approval, because you're talking about consultation for facilitation for the comfort of both council, so it should go be addressed to both council.
Tracy and then Jeff.
First of all, I want to say on the roll call vote. We have to do a roll call vote on everything.
Okay, we can make sure it's a roll call.
Sorry. So yeah.
No,
that's
problem.
Okay. It's interesting that you don't, so I'm kind of curious about that.
We do when there's money, when it's about money.
Yeah, I thought the Sunshine ordinance required it always, unless it's like a minute and you can do blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's just a learning for me. I'm not interested. We'll figure that out, Charles. I think it's a great point, and maybe the executive committee will put our heads together, which I'm not on, and figure out what our process should be. I keep forgetting.
I was going to say that under normal circumstances, maybe less so today, that our executive committee is our whole entire executive committee is on this thing. So it seems like it would be kind of redundant for us to bring it back to our executive committee, and then we don't have a similar process that it sounds like you guys have, where we would then bring it back to our full council to vote and then to have a decision made. I don't think there would be any reason why the members of our council would feel one way or the other whether we hired a consultant for this process.
Yeah, I think it would probably just go to
am I wrong?
Right.
I mean, about the process?
No, I think you're making a great point.
Okay. So this is just for the council. Anything else?
All right, motion on the floor is to hire a consultant for the Joint Steering Executive Committee. Jack Bowman.
Yes.
Paul. Mary Lawrence Hicks.
Yes.
Andrew Lopez.
Yes.
Chip Supanich.
Yes.
Channing Celeste Wayne.
Yes.
Eric Sutter and Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Kenneth Hornby and Wade Flores.
Yes.
Charles Cerrone.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Now I just want to take a look at our time. We're at 20-6, and we're still on item number 9. So, we're not going to get to everything today. Probably not going to get to 11 at all. And we might have to save 10 for next time, too, because I want to understand this process around getting this consultant. We've got some good ideas. We should finish the discussion. I don't want to cut it short of what everybody else thinks. And we still have a speakers list, an active speakers list. So. Okay? So we'll just move forward with this one item and see if we can wrap it up by 6.
Okay. I think we may just want to touch upon some things that we need to get done in the next meeting, just in the action steps, maybe.
Maybe we can save 5 minutes to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So continuing with the speakers list, we had Eric, Ken, and then Allie.
I was actually just going to wonder aloud about what just happened. So that's most of what I was going to say, but I also think what Jack was talking about is a really good idea. I think we're already probably overcommitted as being a part of this group, but I think maybe even creating some kind of a small work group to see through the hiring of this person would be important. I think it's important that we really have the buy-in of people from both councils when bringing this person forward. So I feel like that's worth looking into. I'm not even sure how that would look procedurally, but I feel like there's just some kind of like ad hoc group of people who are just willing to take part in this and be able to
Thanks.
Ken?
Yeah, I think whoever we
hires shouldn't have a vested interest in how the facilitation comes out. I think they should be neutral through the whole process and let us decide which way it turns out.
Alec?
Well, I just wanted to follow up on something that Mary Lawrence said. I think that you mentioned wanting to look at documents and how they put together information. And I was just wondering about, my understanding was that in this joint exec hearing that there would be, the co-chairs would be a first run of facilitating the meeting. Is that still going to be, is that still the plan of having co-chairs being the facilitators and then this additional consultant being kind of the synthesizer of information? Like, if we were to compare it to a previous consultant model, it would be more on the task force spectrum than the public work group spectrum. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It's a great question. What I had in mind when I said that was the healthcare reform task force. And my memory of that was that there were co-chairs, but that the meetings really were facilitated by Harder. And now that I think about it, I don't really remember what the co-chair's role was.
Well, I think it was similar to our retreat, where the co-chairs opened the meeting with various agenda items and then actually turned it over to the facilitator.
Okay, yeah. So that's the model I think works well, but...
I think the facilitator would lead the discussions, but that the meeting would be facilitated by, do you know what I mean, the co-chairs. So that's pretty much what Mark just said.
I think also when we've had outside consultants for work groups with HPPC, we've had co-chairs and a consultant, and the co-chairs usually work with the consultant to plan what the meeting is going to look like and that kind of thing, and that it's a hybrid where I like the he was saying that they lead the discussion, but then the co-chairs actually facilitate.
So, like calling on people and all that? Sorry,
I don't know.
We just did a work group with prevention for substance use, and the facilitator did not run the meeting, but she took notes and she synthesized information and she reported back to the group, and then, but the chairs really led the discussion, led the agenda. But she would come up with, you know, if you hadn't thought of something, she might interject at some point. So there's different styles of facilitation.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like she was on the agenda.
Right?
Like the co-chairs would be like, all right, we're going to have a presentation from this facilitator.
Yeah, she would bring a lot of information with her. Yeah, you're right, Jay.
But I think it's important just to kind of touch on what Mary Lauren said earlier, is just the synthesization of information and how that's going to be put forth, because we're going to be going through a lot of policies and procedures and bylaws and all that kind of stuff, and having someone that's able to kind of look at what's already existing and kind of start plugging things in, and then we can then have greater discussions to kind of move things forward along a little bit faster would be, I think, is a main critical component of the consultant.
And we will have council support of some sort, won't we? I mean, have we agreed on that yet? That where administrative support will come from for the joint group?
Yes, we will definitely be there.
Okay.
But we will not be facilitating the meeting.
Right.
So, Kevin, and then...
Jen.
Jen.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tracy.
I was co-chair of the healthcare reform task force, and they did do a lot of synthesizing, but they also had product in mind, and so they kept us focused. They knew that they had to gather up a certain amount of information, very specific kinds of information, so they kept us focused on the task at hand of producing a set of recommendations for providers and for consumers.
All right, Jen, then Tracy, then Mark.
Yeah, I was just going to speak to the motion. I was just curious if when you, because you didn't really phrase it, you said that we would phrase it. Did you mean just hiring a consultant was all we were voting on, or all the intricacies of interviewing and all of that?
It seems to me we're crazy if we start getting micromanaging all this. I was proposing
just the
hiring.
Okay, I was just clarifying. Yeah.
Tracy?
I was thinking that the facilitation question would be a good question for the candidates. Like, how do you like to work with the group? You know, what do you think is the best? And then that way,
definitely,
whoever's talking with them can understand, you know, like, can you feel comfortable comfortable with that goal, is that something that would work for us?
Great. I have Mark and then Charles.
I think what Kevin brings up actually could pose a potential hiccup or bump in some ways if we're envisioning this, whether it's Harder or some other entity or individual who's doing this. They did a superb job, but it's true. They had an end goal in mind, which was the production of a document. This is not the case with this consultant. This consultant, it's a lot more nebulous. It simply aid us by facilitating this ongoing meeting so that we can actually get together. That's I think, a tougher thing. I think I'm not saying that this can't be done because of that. I just think that needs to definitely be portrayed. Like, something that amorphous needs to be portrayed in concrete terms to the potential people that you guys are going to be interviewing. Because it's going to be, I think, a lot less easier for the applicants or whoever, whatever you want to call them, to envision.
Charles?
So I really don't think that you need a hub group with a group with this. What you really need is the two co-chairs.
I'm sorry, a what group?
Ad hoc.
Oh, ad hoc group. What you need is the two co-chairs, the Department of the AIDS Office, Tracy and Mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the, and two other persons in the community that does the interviewing and ask the question. Because I don't think we really want to micromanage this, right? So we want some representation of the group and that we trust and say, these are our questions, these are our concerns, then bring him on and bring him on. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a 1 month or 2 weeks or whatever it is process. It could be, you know, the two co-chairs of the joining merge, the two director, the AIDS office, and pick another person that's going to be on that interview.
So Jack next, and then Tracy, did you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, and then Kat.
I was going to say that in some ways I agree with you that there's not like a specific product that we're trying to come out with, but then there kind of is a specific product we're trying to come out with, in the sense that, like, I mean, through this process we're going to be like developing our policies and procedures, we're going to be doing all this stuff, and like those are all products that we have to produce in order to make this merge happen at the end. So I feel like I agree that I wouldn't want a facilitator that was like, yeah, I have real ideas about I think the decision making of this new body should look like, or the number of members it should have, or like whatever, that I don't want. But I would want somebody that knows that at the end of this period of time, we need to have like these four things, right? Like policies and procedures, we need to have define our leadership or define our membership, we need to have like da 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 da. Because I think that like what Kevin is saying, to have somebody be like, all right, girl, we're reining in this conversation because we're moving on with our lives.
Yeah.
And because we have a goal to meet, I think is part of the dream of having somebody else do it for you.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I do think there are products that we would want to help us guide us our next step.
It's like a strategic or business plan, essentially. It seems nebulous in some ways, but it's so is healthcare reform.
Ken?
So I need to get a little clarification, because I heard what Charles said and I kind of disagree. If we're going to get this done, it seems to me trying to coordinate more meetings with more people, why it can't just be an open, any of the people in this room to be able to come to hear these folks present, or are we talking about a two-step where there's a group that first gets the three and then the three present to this program? So I'm a little bit lost on how we're talking about doing this.
I think we need to actually flesh that out myself. That was actually one of the questions I just had of how we're going to move forward with selecting this process. But thank you.
But I would guess I would advocate at some point that we not try to have it so focused but only you, only you. I mean, if we want good input, we have to recognize that there are three or four people that aren't here today, not because they didn't want to, but because they had schedules. So it's better off to utilize the folks that we have so that we do have these things.
Dean, and then Mark and Deck.
What happened to me?
I think maybe you met Mary Lawrence.
Oh, Dean, sorry. Dean,
oh, okay.
Mary Lawrence, and then Jack. Sorry.
I can't read my handwriting because I'm jotting them down. It's okay.
The points I was going to bring up were covered, and that's just that we, I feel like we don't know what the details of the product are, but we do have like a general idea of some kind of finished product or end result that we're hoping to get at the end of this. And I was just going to add that, and that open for whatever process for selecting this and vetting and evaluating and bringing that forward, however the group here feels most comfortable moving forward with that.
Two points. One thing that Mark said, I think is important to keep. I agree. We there will be a product that with things that we need to look at to do with bylaws, etc. It's very important that we have a contractor who is good at producing that. But the other thing, the difference, I think, what Mark was trying to bring up is that in the healthcare reform task force, there was no controversy. We all had the same goal. We wanted to create this document. And they were very, very good at keeping us on topic if we got a little off and distracted. But this is going to be a very different kind of process where people are not in agreement. There are big points that we are not in agreement on as we sit at this table right now. We want a facilitator who is good at helping us get through that. Are we going to have term limits or not? Are we going to have a completely new application process or not? We need a facilitator who is good at helping us walk through that process and produce the documents that we want. And I don't want us to lose that point. And my suggestion is that we do have, I think it should be a two-step process. I think it is to ask the contractors to come in here and put their first proposal out to this group, whoever is able to come that day, may be too chaotic. It's a big group. We may not be together enough on all the things that we want to make sure that they are going to offer us. So I think we should have a vetting process that initially happens with some trusted people that Charles suggests, but then have the top three candidates come in here with their proposals after they've already been, it's kind of like going to GPA first and then coming to the full council. It's been vetted a little bit. They've been told what they need to present. And then this group, whoever shows up that day, gets to vote. That's my proposal.
And that's what I meant to say, actually. I agree about the other, but I mean, I'm in agreement with you guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jack and then Chip.
I think I'm in agreement with Mary Lawrence.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, the thing that I was thinking was that in terms of whoever it does like sort of like the pre-interview before doing something for the full group, I think I would prefer if it was people who were chosen to do it, only because I'm way more likely to show up for something that I've committed to doing than I am to be like, hey, if you have some time, show up to this thing. Mm-hmm. And if we have an invested interest in making sure that we get like a good parity and like good, like we want to have the right whatever voice minds at the table, then I think we have to, if we want Tracy to be there, we have to schedule Tracy because she's not just going to show up. She's busy.
Okay, so I would like to see a motion come out around all this. Some wording that includes that we will do a two-step process, that and who will be on the group that does the first step. This is a lot onto the next meeting. I just want to make sure that we are able to do that in a month. Yes.
I would make the motion that we put together an ad hoc group to interview the consulting. However you want to phrase it.
Can you say that again?
That we get together an ad hoc group so we can do the interview for the consulting.
Okay.
That would
continue. Do you want to specify who will be in that group?
Dr. Dunell, can we just talk about just getting the ad hoc group?
I mean, I think unless you want to have this become a discussion item at the next meeting as well, it should be specified. Otherwise, we're not going to know who is in the ad hoc group. And it certainly can't be sort of determined behind or closed doors or after this meeting, because it seems like there's been some dialogue between people as far as, well, who should it be? Should it be the co-chair? Should it be the co-chairs plus staff of the council? Should it be this or that? I think it should possibly be. The more spelled out, the better.
Well, Charles, and then.
So, what I'm thinking is the motion should read as the two co-chairs of this committee, the council staff, Mark Molnar, Tracy Packer, Dean Goodwin, and look among yourself who else that needs to be on that table. Should be six people. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. For the first fresh process, and then bring the second process to the full committee.
I definitely appreciate you including me, but I think if you include me, there's not parity. I think if you look at the two co-chairs, that's prevention and care, then you include Tracy and Dean. Not to just pull out of this, I'm sorry, but it just seems like a third person, that's a care person. If the concern is equal numbers, I want to be the first to sacrifice.
Take
part.
Out Dean. Let's do parity.
I move that we have a two-step process. We have an ad hoc committee that is made up of the two
co-chairs.
Actually,
there's a motion on the table.
Well,
so
there
you
is. Oh,
amend
oops.
The motion.
Sorry.
But that wasn't a complete motion.
Okay. Sorry, Jeff.
We're still talking about the motion to be presented, so there's no motion on the floor.
That's okay. Yeah. I think you can still just share your thought, and I think it will do what you want.
Okay. So, an ad hoc committee to do the interview, and then the second step being that they bring it back to the full committee. That the ad hoc committee is made up of the co-chairs of Dean and Tracy, and then two members of this committee, one who represents the interest of prevention and one who represents the interest of care. I don't know if there's anybody from care who wants to tribute themselves. It would be Ken Hornby and me.
Okay, so is there a second to that motion?
Second that.
Give that one to Channing.
Okay. Channing's like, I'm not on it.
I want to get this.
Tracy. Maybe it's just a...
Tracy.
I just have a question because I think Dean and I can provide support, but I don't think I should be voting on the group, not voting, but like as that ad hoc group, I think my role would be support rather than selecting. Because I don't think the department, I keep speaking to Dean, but I don't think that the department should be involved in selecting. Our job is to support you in, bringing people to the table and maybe helping ask, frame the questions and write them up and stuff like that, but I don't think we should be choosing.
Dean, I completely agree, and I think that perhaps our role is the initial, and we can. I took some notes, and Jen has better notes, and all of us have good notes, and we can kind of draw up what we're going to send, share that, get some feedback, and then we can work collaboratively to cast a net and pull those folks in for the first review of the ad hoc committee, and that could be our role, and then we're there to support and to help answer questions and provide guidance, but not to help select. I completely agree.
Okay. Just a slight caveat on it. While I appreciate the two volunteers, I think saying that either of them or other people, if they are not able, give us some flexibility, because if we're going to try to get this group, I think you would agree, if something happens and Jackson's the only person that can't because this is something he has to do, let's not stop it. Or Ken can't do it. There are others of around
the alternates.
Right. If you want to call it alternates. But the chairs, at least, can be the people that keep saying, okay, Ken that can't do it, let's see if maybe Charles can do it or Harry.
So to find replacements for people.
Right. But the point being the structure of these six individuals.
So is someone moving to amend the motion?
Yeah. So just a process thing here as far as this motion, which seems to have potentially gone through many ramifications, but the author and the second haven't actually changed it. So would you be interested in changing it in those two ways? I guess removing, per the suggestion of Tracy and Dean, and instead of naming participants outside of the two kitchens, saying one representative each from care and prevention?
I'm for that. I guess I would maybe be interested in finding a replacement for Tracy and Dean, then removing them so that we have. Well, unless six people is too many.
They're going to be there.
Six people.
They're just not going to be. You all will be selecting. They're going to just guide you.
Yeah. So it'll be the four people.
I thought you two of you.
The four people looking at things that Dean and Tracy are providing for look at.
Got it. Yes. And for both of those.
Okay. Does the second agree? Okay.
All right, is discussion finished?
We'll have a vote.
Okay, so starting from the bottom, Charles Theron.
I'm sorry, I got a question. So you're asking for two more people, is that?
No.
You're asking for alternate.
No.
Yes, the chairs will handle replacement. We'll find other replacements.
It's simply
the
two co-chairs, okay, and one representative from care and one from prevention.
With the guidance of Dean and Tracy.
Yeah.
And the co-chairs can select.
If one
can't make it, then the co-chairs will.
I would like that spelled out. If the other two can make it, but the co-chair will make the decision.
Yes.
Right.
I don't think that's necessary, because the way the motion stands is one person from prevention, one person from care, Dean and Tracy as guiders, and the co-chairs of this committee will be there, period.
And we'll figure out
if one person from care cannot make it, both of them cannot make it, who's going to be the two other people?
It doesn't matter, because all you have said is there will be one person from prevention and one from care.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. So you know you're going to have that. It's up to them to make sure that all those people are there.
Yeah, they'll bring
them.
Okay? Yeah, they'll bring
them.
So, from the bottom, Charles Theron?
Yes.
Kenneth Hornby and Wade Flores?
Yes.
Eric Sutter and Ken Pierce?
Yes.
Channing Celeste Wayne?
Yes.
Chip Sapanich?
Yes.
Andrew Lopez?
Yes.
Mary Lawrence Hicks?
Yes.
Jack Bowman?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Did Council Support bring evaluation forms this time? Did we say we were going to do it?
This Council Support that does that, so...
Okay, so all right, then we're adjourned.
So thumbs up.
So before adjourning, next agenda item. So clearly we have these bottom two as the first two agenda. Should that be the? Well, you know what? We could start with that, and I'll just email the co-chairs, and you guys can tell me what you want to add.
Ideally is going to be that we have these proposals and we vote on it.
Yeah, for sure.
Are we supposed to bring evaluation?
I think Eileen said that's. I think. It was a conversation between, I was CC, but I think it was mainly a conversation between Andrew and Eileen about whether or not to bring evaluations, and I'm not sure who said we should, but in the end, the two of them decided that they should.
And that it was prevention staff.
Yeah, because I forget who it was, Andrew or Eileen, said this is something that we always, that we should do. Do you remember that? It was between you and Eileen on that.
I thought the evaluation was you guys had them last time, and that would be the right.
I think you were confused there, because we don't ever do evaluations at the end of the committee meeting. It was Eileen who said we actually do them at every meeting.
I was
confused.
I will, I guess.
Could the co-chairs decide how they want to handle evaluation and make that decision and tell us?
Yes.
Thank you.
Tracy,
So before we adjourn, I kind of just wanted to put one thing on the table, just in order to get us, we have one meeting slated for our final meeting, and in the hopes of maybe preventing a fourth meeting, I wanted to maybe just see if people wanted, were okay with maybe looking to extend the next meeting for an hour, since we have to do a selection process, and we have a lot of things to do.
Definitely.
Three hours. Yeah. So our next meeting will be in 3 hours. And do we already have a date for the next meeting?
No, we'll send out a doodle.
Okay. So we'll send out a doodle.
We'll try to do a similar time frame. Okay. Knowing what people's parameters are.
Can we perhaps
Thanks,
food
everyone.
At the next meeting?
What?
Can we have food at the next meeting? Are you a snack?
Yes.
You're in charge of that.
Yes. We'll bring food to the next meeting.
All right.
We'll order food.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear.